coming up on the My Ag Life Daily News Report. We hear from a past president of the California Cattlemen's Association on wildfires. And we hear what some lawmakers are thinking when it comes to controlling wildfires. We also have today's news brief, but we start today with My Ag Life in almonds. Almond Day 2021 is coming up on June 15th. Here's Taylor Chalstrom and Jason Scott with more.
Jason, let's talk about the almond industry experts who will be participating in the conference panel. Who will be joining the conference and what opportunities will it provide for growers and crop consultants?
Yeah, so we're excited about the 2021 Almond Day. We've put together a great agenda. We'll be having growers and crop consultants joining us from all across California, from the northern corridor all the way down south. And I think that's what continues to be a great privilege for our industry in doing these virtual events. Almond Day this year is virtual. And so it's going to be a great opportunity for folks to be able to slow impact, right? You can go to your computer and join this day, great day of education. We've got some really great speakers lined up, a lot of great researchers. If it's okay with you, I'd like to maybe just go through the agenda a little bit and just kind of highlight some of the key talks we'll be having. So everything starts up at 7:30. We'll have a virtual trade show where you can visit with vendors and learn about the latest and greatest technologies that our sponsors and vendors are offering at 7:30 from 8. And then at 8 o'clock, we'll be talking about managing stink bugs and almonds. And at 8:30, we will discuss developing and monitoring systems for leaf-footed bugs. At 9 o'clock, we will discuss best management practices for nitrogen in almonds. And then at 9:30, we'll have a break. And again, you'll be able to take a break, get a cup of coffee, talk to our vendors and our sponsors, go through our virtual trade show where there'll be videos and all kinds of information, PDFs, great resources for technologies and things you're looking for your operations. And then we'll reconvene at 10:30 and we'll talk on the next talk will be the latest on Ganoderma butt rot. And at 11, we'll discuss improved management for spider mites. And then our final seminar at 11:30 will be planting new orchards after whole orchard recycling.
Okay. And Jason, this event will be offering some continuing education credits, including some hard to get ones. What are those credits that will be offered?
Yeah, so we have applied for 2 hours of DPR credit. In the other category, we will have 3 hours of CCA credits and then about half an hour, right, of INMP credit, and that is for nutrition. So yeah, definitely some great educational opportunities, kind of a jam-packed day of continuing education, some great topics, hot topics for the almond industry.
Okay. Thanks for that, Jason. Why is West Coast Nut holding this annual almond event?
Well, great question. Almond Day was designed to focus a lot on the pre-harvest issues that almond growers face. And because we've got so many almond growers in the state, we have over 7,000 almond growers that subscribe to West Coast Nut, and between bearing and non-bearing, 1.6 million acres of almonds in the Golden State. There is a big need for information for this category. And so West Coast Nut prides themselves on being a leader in delivering critical information at the right moment in time for our industry. And so it'd only be appropriate, you know, to hold this very timely pre-harvest meeting for one of the leading commodities in California.
Do you believe that Almond Day 2021 event in particular is going to offer this information that people just may not be able to get anywhere else?
I think that's a really good point. We're still at kind of this awkward phase in life, right, where things are starting to return to normal from COVID. And so I think this affords everybody a safe resource. We're all anxious to get back to live events, myself included, as somebody who holds many live events throughout the state. I can't wait to join, come back together and be able to do that. But we're still at kind of this kind of awkward moment where things are starting to open up, but we're still trying to get the vaccine out there, and we're still trying to get our head above water and really understand what needs to happen next in terms of gatherings. And so this is the right move. And it continues to give everybody equal and fair opportunity, no matter where you are, where you live in the state. If you're growing almonds, this is a great opportunity for you. It's, again, the commitment's low impact. You can do it from your office or your home office. And it's a half a day event, and you'll get a bunch of credit. We're really trying to, keep the topics relevant and interesting. One of the things we will be doing at this conference is all the talks, after the talks, we'll have a live Q&A. And so you'll have an opportunity to talk to the researchers, ask your questions, and get answers. So we've scheduled time so that you guys can do that. And knock on wood, hopefully, one of the things we've learned in the virtual world is no event is perfect in the virtual world, but hopefully we'll be able to minimize any technological difficulties, which often happen with these virtual events. But on the flip side of that, again, you're able to view it from your home. You're able to get the critical information, the education. We really work hard to make this process as easy as possible for our attendees, for everybody involved, our vendors, and for our speakers. And so we really try to work very hard on the industry's behalf to put a first-class event together that will be easy, fun, and informational.
I agree with that. It will be easy and fun. And I like your point that you made about it being an equal and fair opportunity for people in the state. I think that is a really important aspect of virtual events. As much as people like those in-person events, not everyone can always attend them. And so having this virtual event on one of the last couple of days that the state isn't in a place of lockdown, I think is really interesting, and it will still give people kind of one last chance to get this information virtually before we go back into those in-person events. A lot of these topics are really important right now and really current. What was West Coast Nut and JCS Marketing's strategy with picking these particular topics to get that specific information out to almond growers?
Well, again, we're always working on what's most relevant for the industry. And so Almond Day has always historically been a pre-harvest meeting. So that's really our strategy is we've developed the majority of these talks are for pre-harvest and, dealing with issues that surround pre-harvest. And so that's really what we had in mind. Is coming up with some timely topics to kind of help elevate your pre-harvest and give you some good information and some things to think about during this time of the year.
Okay. Getting back to the basics of the conference here, where is this conference? When is it? And how can growers attend it?
Yeah, so you can visit our website, wcngg.com. And you can register, you can go to our trade shows and you can register. The cost is free as always. And so it's a great way to pick up some hours. You register for the event, we'll send you a link and you'll fill out just some simple information and you'll be registered, and then we'll send you reminders as we get closer. And so again, we try to keep it as easy as possible. The only thing we ask in return for this free event is that you attend, and that you fill out the information that we ask for. And but we'd love to have you. And so I think we try to make this as simple as possible. So the event is free. You can go to our website. It'll be on a virtual platform, so you don't have to show up to a facility or a building. You can do it from the comfort of your home or your work or home office.
Definitely. It has been made as simple as possible for folks out there. Jason, what else can growers and crop consultants look forward to with this conference?
I think we pretty much covered the majority of it. Again, just to summarize, it's a free event. We're offering a good amount of credit. Again, 2 hours of DPR have been applied for, 3 hours of CCA credit, and then a half an hour of INP credit that goes towards nutrition. So half a day, great topics, opportunities to talk to UC experts, ask questions, network with vendors. There's a lot of great opportunities there. And what do you got better going on that day? So if you're in the almond industry, as I always say, you need to be at the Almond Day 2021.
Couldn't agree more. Jason, thanks for coming on and talking about the 2021 Almond Day today. We appreciate you being here. You're not going to want to miss it. You're not going to want to miss getting that 5.5 hours total of continuing education credits and some of those hard to get credits as well. So be there. Thanks for coming on, Jason.
All right. We'll see everybody on June 15th.
Awesome. This is Taylor with the MIAG Life Daily News Report.
Thanks again to Taylor Chalstrom and Jason Scott. Our news brief is coming up next. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board.
Here's your news brief for today. A federal court in California gave the Environmental Protection Agency two choices on the insecticide chlorpyrifos. The agency has 60 days to write a new rule to allow for the safe use of the insecticide, or it can halt all food residue tolerances of chlorpyrifos, which would basically ban most uses of the product. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco says the EPA has had long enough to respond to a 2007 petition by environmental groups to ban the chemical. The court says the EPA has had almost 14 years to publish a legally sufficient response to that 2007 petition. The court's ruling also says that during the delay, the EPA has exposed a generation of America's children to unsafe levels of chlorpyrifos. It says, quote, by remanding back to the EPA one last time, rather than compelling the immediate revocation of all chlorpyrifos tolerances, the court is being more than tolerant, but the EPA's time is now up. In a statement to DTN, the agency says it's reviewing all its options as the agency pursues its mission to protect human health, including that of children and the environment. EPA is committed to ensuring the safety of pesticides and other chemicals, the agency says. The Risk Management Agency program for livestock producers has seen significant increases in participation after it was recently updated. Rod Bain reports.
Aspects of some of USDA's Risk Management Agency programs focused on livestock and dairy will be updated effective for 2022. One such program, though, Livestock Risk Protection, will not be updated for next year, although RMA Acting Administrator Richard Flournoy notes,
"We have had a lot of recent changes.
Those changes to RLP coverage of feeder cattle, fed cattle, and swine include
allowing increased head limits, and we've provided additional subsidies. And as a result of these changes, we've seen a 1,000% increase in program participation compared to the 2020 crop year. Currently, and the year is still ongoing."
Other RMA programs, such as dairy revenue protection and livestock gross margin, join livestock risk protection as available risk management options for livestock and dairy producers. Details on these programs are available through local crop insurance agents or online at www.rma.usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
A new study sponsored by the National Biodiesel Board shows switching to biodiesel will result in several health benefits, including decreased cancer risk, fewer premature deaths, and reduced asthma attack. The research was conducted at 13 sites across the U.S. that get regularly exposed to high rates of petroleum diesel pollution. Researchers found that switching to 100% biodiesel in the home heating oil and transportation sectors would provide immediate community health benefits that can be measured in reduced medical costs and medical care benefits, such as preventing 340 premature deaths every year. That study, again, though, sponsored by the National Biodiesel Board. The USDA says the proposed American Families Plan would protect most farmers from big capital gains taxes. Gary Crawford has more.
When a farm is inherited by family members, they may face, in a few cases, a large tax bill.
Oftentimes, the only option that they have is to sell some or all of the farm.
But Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told us that if the president's American Families Plan becomes law,
we're not going to see the need for farms to be sold. We're not going to see people being kicked off the land.
He says under the plan,
if the farm continues to be in the family and the farm family continues to operate the farm, So dad and mom pass away, but son and daughter basically continue to operate the farm. There is no tax penalty. There is no capital gains due. The farming operation continues. There's no tax owed to the Internal Revenue Service.
And if the heirs do need to sell the farm, there's $1 million per person capital gains exemption.
So for mom and dad, that's $2 million of gain that can be transferred without any tax complications at all.
If their home's on the farm, then that's another $500,000 exemption. Vilsack says these rules will cover 98.5% of all the farms in the country. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
A total of 88 U.S. and European organizations representing a wide range of industries are asking for an end to trade tariffs between the U.S. and the EU. The group sent a letter to leaders on both sides of the Atlantic asking for the permanent removal of the tariffs on sectors unrelated to the ongoing transatlantic trade dispute. The Hagstrom Report says the organizations range from agricultural products to consumer goods. The letter opens by thanking the U.S. and EU for the four-month suspension of tariffs imposed in connection with the World Trade Organization dispute concerning civil aircraft subsidies. The National Association of Conservation Districts submitted a letter to the USDA in response to the agency's request for comments on climate-smart solutions to mitigate the effects of climate change. Climate-smart agriculture and forestry need significantly more government investment and action to meet the need of oversubscribed programs, said NACD President Michael Crowder. Among the suggestions, the NACD Climate Action Task Force reiterated its request for at least $1.2 billion in the fiscal year 2022 discretional funding for conservation operations to bolster local technical assistance. That is our news brief for today. Up next, a House hearing on wildfire. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
My Ag Life, calendar of events. Here's Taylor Chalstrom with what's happening around the state.
On May 4th, we have pesticide safety webinar series, Rodenticides and Wildlife, as well as a virtual regional workshop in the North Coast region. On May 5th, we have 2021 UC Cooperative Extension Tree and Vine IPM Breakfast Meeting, Cherry Buckskin. And on May 6th, we have a continuing education webinar for laws and regulation updates for paraquat label changes, as well as another continuing education webinar for pest ID, pest life cycles, and IPM. Check out those events and more at myaglife.com. And don't forget that registration is now open for the 2021 Almond Day, hosted by West Coast Nut on June 15th, 2021. It's going to be a virtual event with CEU credits offered.
Get more details at myaglife.com.
California cattle rancher and past CCA president Dave Daly testified before the U.S. House Subcommittee on National Parks, Forests, and Public Lands last week at a hearing titled Wildfire in a Warming World: Opportunities to Improve Community Collaboration, Climate Resilience, and Workforce Capacity. Subcommittee Ranking Member Republican Russ Fulcher of Idaho gave opening statements and talked about Daly and his experience with wildfire.
Today we meet to discuss an issue of dire importance. Our nation is in the midst of a crisis. Far too many of our Western landscapes are being lost to catastrophic wildfires. We have grown painfully accustomed to deadly and destructive blazes wreaking havoc throughout the West year after year. In the last decade, over 60 million acres have burned, with over 10 million acres in the last year alone. The environmental damage caused by wildfires is undeniable. However, the human cost is far greater. Since 2005, over 89,000 structures were destroyed by wildfires, leading to an untold number of deaths and enormous personal losses. Entire towns have literally gone up in smoke. Unfortunately, the Republican witness today, Mr. Dave Daly, knows the enormous personal loss of wildfires all too well. Mr. Daly is a sixth-generation rancher who tragically lost most of his herd in the massive North Complex fire just last year in Northern California. Over 300,000 acres burned and 15 people tragically lost their lives. It was the sixth largest fire in California history, the deadliest fire of 2020. Sadly, it was not alone, as California suffered through five of top 10 worst wildfires in state histories just last year. Mr. Daly and his family know what good stewardship looks like. They have been ranching in Northern California since 1882. That's 1882, not 1982. And have responsibly taken care of the land, continuing to ignore the ticking time bombs that we have allowed our national forest to become is the opposite of good stewardship. While the frequency of this devastation has blunted some of our collective shock, we must not allow that to turn into complacency. We must also dispel the notion that there is nothing that we can do. The title of today's hearing is Wildfire in a Warming World. And while I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this very important topic, too frequently, many of my friends on the other side of the aisle have blamed climate change for an ever-growing multitude of sins, including wildfires, while ignoring the real culprit of our present disaster. Decades of insufficient forest management, not climate change, have led to overgrown, diseased, and dying forests throughout the West. While a staggering 63 million acres of forest land remain at high risk for wildfire in the U.S., the Forest Service is completing less than 5% of its necessary fuels reduction projects. At this paltry pace, we won't tackle our high-risk backlogs for decades, and we will continue to experience devastating wildfire seasons in perpetuity with no end in sight. Fortunately, Republicans have offered a real solution to this problem. I've previously introduced the Treating Tribes and Counties as Good Neighbors Act, which enhances the hugely successful Good Neighbor Authority by fixing errors in the 2018 Farm Bill that have not allowed tribes and counties to take full advantage of the authority. Recently, I also introduced the Forestry Education and Workforce Development Act, which invests $20 million annually to education programs and at land-grant colleges and universities and technical schools to encourage students to pursue careers in forestry. In fact, Half of the witnesses testifying at this hearing today are professors at land-grant universities, demonstrating the need to support these schools as we help train the next generation of forestry professionals. These are real achievable steps that we can take to meaningfully turn the tide against this historical challenge. And I implore my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to come to the table to help us provide them. Mr. Daley and his family deserve better from us, as do all in the Western communities that continue to suffer from an out-of-control fires. The American people deserve better from us as well. We must do better. I want to thank all the witnesses for being here today, and I look forward to your testimony. I yield back the balance of my time. Thank you.
Here's Dave Daley's testimony to the committee.
The chair now recognizes Representative LaMalfa for 30 seconds to introduce Dr. Dave Daley, a rancher from Butte County, California.
Thank you, Chairman Neguse. I appreciate that. Also, Ranking Member Fulcher. Dave is a person I've known many, many years in my area here in Northern California. His family has grazed cattle on the Plumas National Forest going back to the 1852 era, when his great-grandfather first came during the Gold Rush era. Dave has earned his PhD in animal science from Colorado State. He's also an immediate past president of the California Cattlemen's Association, currently serves as the chair of the Ecosystem Environment Committee on the Public Lands Council, and is chair of federal lands for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. So he certainly has the background. In addition, he served as associate dean of the College of Agriculture at Chico State University, has been an animal science professor for the last 30 years. During the Bear Fire last year, as it was named here in Butte County, which later became the North Complex Fire when it expanded to an area over 300,000 acres, Dr. Daley lost most of his cattle that were grazing in the Plumas National Forest. His devastating testimony should serve as a wake-up call to all of us as legislators to improve forest management, streamline the environmental review process, given that the town of Berry Creek, which burned in that fire, they had actually a fuels treatment project in the works, but the CEQA process had took almost 2 years to approve what was available in a federal grant that also had to go through NEPA as well. So much frustration and much unnecessary loss in the West due to our inability to really get at the problem of the forest management we need to do. So I'm pleased that Dr. Daley, my friend Dave, could join us today and offer his testimony. Please pay close attention, because this has been a devastating thing for his family and for all of his neighbors that know him and care about this issue. So thank you. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Congressman LaMalfa. This is Dave Daley. I'm coming to you from Butte County, California, and speaking to you not only as an educator and as a cattleman, but as a victim of catastrophic wildfire. And as you may know, in this community, we experienced Camp Fire, which destroyed the town of Paradise 2 or 3 years ago, and now the Bear Fire North Lightning Complex that absolutely devastated this community. This isn't about retreating to corners about who's right. This is about finding solutions. And I often feel both federally, particularly federally, we have to work on an agenda, and it doesn't deal with the tragic realities of what I saw and witnessed. And until you experience that, it's really difficult for me to explain the devastation that occurred. It was dramatic. 200,000 acres in a very few hours. Not only was my cow herd destroyed, but the legacy of my family, my home, the entire ecosystem in the Plumas National Forest was devastated. We could spend a lot of time arguing what caused it, but I would really prefer we think about some solutions instead of simply what the causes may be. That devastating fire was in the watershed of Lake Orville, the second largest earthen-filled dam in the world, the highest dam in the United States, 3.5 million acre feet. What do you think is going to drain there now? What is left of that ecosystem? That affects our community, obviously. That affects me personally, but that affects all of California. That water system, we don't know yet what the effects will be in terms of the devastation we have seen. So to see that at the scale and scope I have, to spend the time to get access into an inferno to try and rescue cows, but it wasn't just about my cows. It was about what I saw in loss of wildlife and ecosystem permanently. We have been taking cattle up there since 1880. We'd work, and I grew up with the Native American community. We're arrogant enough and insulting enough to tell them they can't culturally burn as they did for thousands of years. That's disappointing to me. These are people that their livelihoods, what they did, and many have now lost their homes in the Feather Falls area, were people who knew how to care for the land and the environment at the same time. I remember the last man out stories of the 1800s and the early 1900s, my grandfather told me, where both the Native Americans who we learned from and later us would set those low intensity fires to reduce fuel loads to open the landscape for wildlife. We've lost that. I think you've already heard that from many of the previous speakers. What are we doing to climate change when we introduce in 1 year, we burn 4.2 million acres of California, 10 million acres west-wide, have almost 10,000 fires in California, and we are unwilling to look for solutions. It frustrates me to no end that we put barriers to local decision-making in the way of what we do. The solutions that we would occur, and I realize you're dealing with all the West, but what would happen in a sagebrush ecosystem in Nevada should be different than what happens in the Plumas National Forest on the Front Range of the Sierra Nevada in a large mixed conifer forest, or the grasslands of North Dakota. Yet we seem to think that one size fits all. And unfortunately, we don't consult with those who are impacted. I would invite any of you or your staff to take a tour with me. I hadn't been back since October, except for a brief trip up to look for a Christmas tree that wasn't there. But I took my 90-year-old mother back this last week to see the devastation. She'd spent 72 years gathering cattle there, learning nature, thinking about the botany and the wildlife and the ecosystem. And for her to see that was devastating to me. To have my children, grown adults now, help me gather cattle or attempt to, and to find animals, a calf and a fawn side by side, dead, burnt to death, was almost better than the ones we found alive with their hooves burnt or gone completely. A cub without its mother in a tree with no paws left. A sow bear, a female bear in the water trying to cool her paws. This will not recover in my lifetime. This is a result of federal inaction, and it's not simply the last year, it's the last 60, 80, 100 years. I don't have simple solutions. I would suggest that we could look to prescribe fire. I want to thank the Newsom administration in California. They've been very proactive with us and the Cattlemen's Association to at least begin to investigate solutions of prescribed fire and solutions of grazing as alternatives. So I ask you to think about actually doing something and talk to those of us who are affected. Thank you.
We continue with the hearing right after this.
Agrimayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agrimayor has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agrimayor can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. Having problems with nematodes? Promax is your number one solution. Promax is a powerful fungicide and nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. Promax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRite Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/Promax for more information.
Welcome back. We are covering the U.S. House Subcommittee on National Parks, Forests, and Public Lands hearing titled Wildfire in a Warming World, Opportunities to Improve Community Collaboration, Climate Resilience, and Workforce Capacity. Committee Chair Representative Joe Neguse of Colorado led the meeting with these opening comments.
First, I want to say thank you to each of the members for their participation I know everyone has very busy schedules. Very much appreciate you participating today. And I know there is significant interest amongst members, and we will have members jumping in and out of the hearing today as we proceed. And of course, I want to say thank you to the witnesses for their testimony. For those of us that live in the West, wildfires are one of the most immediate and obvious impacts of climate change. Wildfires today are nearly a year-round risk, burning larger areas at higher intensity. And this is only projected to increase as the climate continues to warm. In fact, my congressional district was impacted by record-setting wildfires in 2020. Last year, the Cameron Peak Fire and the East Troublesome Fire in Larimer County and in Grand County, respectively, were two of the largest wildfires in Colorado history, both of which were in my congressional district. These fires occurred later in the season and at higher elevations than typical. There are probably two things most Coloradans would say that they love about our state, our communities, and our public lands, which is why it's imperative that we identify bipartisan opportunities that will facilitate community protection and ecosystem restoration throughout the West. And I look forward to working with Ranking Member Westerman and Ranking Member Fulcher on those initiatives. We know that climate change is the overarching factor driving wildfires. However, there are also other human drivers that contribute to the likelihood that wildfire will impact people and property. Those factors include increased development in fire-prone areas and near wildlands, coupled with nearly a century of implementing forest policies that prioritize commercial activities too often at the expense of other values, including clean water, wildlife habitat, and healthy fire-resilient ecosystems. The challenges that face our forests didn't emerge overnight. So as we considered opportunities to improve forest health and resilience, we must be conscious of past mistakes and ensure that our policy prescriptions don't simply deliver the same results by dressing up old approaches in new rhetoric. To meet this objective, I proposed robust investments in federal restoration efforts, including a new civilian climate corps designed to address immediate restoration needs and create rural jobs in places like Colorado, Arizona, Nevada, Idaho, Oregon, all across the West, a pipeline for careers in land management and conservation. Even if Congress is able to deliver at the scale that we know is necessary, there's still a need to better prioritize science in targeting investments for the greater long-term benefit of climate biodiversity and community protection. In addition to addressing immediate restoration needs, we need more well-paid permanent opportunities to grow the federal land management workforce. As the federal budget has shifted towards wildfire suppression, there has been a corresponding reduction in non-fire personnel, costing us land managers, biologists, other scientists with the expertise to plan for fire and improve the resiliency of the landscape in the first place. Although Congress has acted in recent years to increase the budget for wildfire suppression, two things are clear. One, stopping the drain of resources away from the federal land management agencies has not had the desired effect of restoring core capacities. And two, while the fire funding fix ended the practice of fire borrowing, it did virtually nothing to improve the healthcare, pay, or general well-being of those on the front lines of these climate-driven disasters, our federal wildland firefighters. Our witnesses today will provide a range of perspectives at the nexus of climate and wildfire, including how we can promote collaboration, reduce conflict to support more community protection, conservation, and restoration work. We'll also hear about some of the challenges faced by the federal wildfire workforce, the opportunities that exist to recognize these individuals as full-time federal firefighters, and to utilize those skills year-round for improved mitigation and response, including their ability to support fire-adapted landscapes. During an active wildfire, we always prioritize the protection of people and property. But here in Congress, we can do a better job of prioritizing our essential wildfire personnel, restoring core capacity to the land management agencies, encouraging more effective collaboration, and better incorporating carbon and biodiversity in land management planning. Finally, it bears repeating that even with substantial investments in restoration, workforce, community protection, it doesn't alleviate the need for more comprehensive action to reduce national and global climate emissions. Conservation of our forests and public land should certainly be part of any climate solution. The Biden administration has continued to pursue their goal of protecting 30% of U.S. lands and waters by 2030, and it may consider how existing collaborative structures and programs can be expanded in order to prioritize restoration work near vulnerable communities, while also identifying those high-value conservation areas that are best managed for their natural resiliency and undeveloped characteristics.
Full committee ranking member Republican Bruce Westerman of Arkansas also gave opening statements.
Thank you, Chairman Neguse and Ranking Member Fulcher and Chairman Grijalva. I'm so glad that we're having this hearing today. It's a hearing that is important to all of the country. And Chairman Neguse, I know this is an issue that's very important to you as you've started a bipartisan wildfire caucus. I know this affects Colorado. It affects all of our states. So these are the kinds of hearings that we need to have. Also want to thank the witnesses for being here today. Like many of you, I was in D.C. last night for the State of the Union address, but after it was over and after all the interviews, I started reading briefing materials for the hearing today and didn't get as much sleep as I would like. Caught an early flight out this morning and got a chance to read even more of the testimonies. And we've got some good information to go over today. And as Ranking Member Fulcher said, there's 63 million acres at a minimum of Forest Service land that needs fuel reduction treatments. It's subject to high risk for wildfire. We're only treating about 1.4 million acres a year. That's way less than what we need. We have to ask why that's happening. Is it a funding problem? We've tried to fix funding, as has been mentioned, but we've also got a permitting problem. And we've got good laws, good environmental laws that were put in place with good reasons that have been weaponized that are actually stopping the science from happening. We've got special interests and lawyers who are using the rules that were put in place to help our environment actually do detriment to our environment. We've got to take a real look at that. This is a real problem. I want to borrow from President Biden's words last night. He wasn't talking about wildfire, but I think his words apply to it when he said that doing nothing is not an option. For far too long, we've done nothing. We've allowed the special interest groups to stop all the management plans from the Forest Service, and we've done nothing. So nature's taken over and nature's doing something. Nature's cleaning out these forests at an incredible rate. I know we invite a lot of different views and opinions to the committee, and that's a good thing so that we can discuss those. I know we'll be hearing testimony today from a majority of witnesses who will advocate for doing less treatment on our federal lands, not more. And with that being said, I would like to ask unanimous consent to submit a letter for the record signed by over three dozen scientists advocating for science-based forest management policies and that recognize the carbon sequestration benefits of active management and harvested wood products. The letter directly refutes conclusions reached by one of our panelists, Dr. Law, and it states, I quote, "Dr. Law used process models that suggest the forest sector was a net source of greenhouse gas instead of a net sink in Oregon. To get that result, they assume that harvested forests are not replanted, though that is required by law. Wood products were mostly used for low-value, short-lived products. Wood substitutes was of minimal significance, and large wildfire losses were excluded from their data set as uncharacteristic, including the 2002 Biscayne wildfire." Those are some pretty major holes in the research, and what science actually tells us is that thinning and prescribed fire increases forest carbon by as much as 18% compared to no harvest scenarios, which equates to the removal of carbon emissions from 55,000 to 110,000 passenger vehicles per year until the end of the century. In contrast, catastrophic wildfires in untreated areas can release tens of millions of metric tons of carbon into the atmosphere. This was the case last year in California, where wildfire emissions equated to driving roughly 24 million passenger vehicles on our roads for an entire year. We want to get serious about wildfires and about forest management, about what's doing best for the economy, not just for the climate and getting carbon out of the atmosphere, but also for cleaning water, providing wildlife habitat, and providing more biodiversity. Then I asked my colleagues to take a serious look at the Trove Trees Act. It talks about science-based forest management. It talks about planting trees where we need to plant more trees, and it talks about taking care of the forests that we have, and it also talks about markets for wood products so that we can create a bank of carbon, which there's a lot of research, peer-reviewed research, that says that is the most or the best way to reduce carbon using our forest is to manage our forest, to use the wood products sustainably, and to it also, there's research that says that we should be using biofuels that are generated from the forest. We've also got an exciting part in the Nutrient Trees Act that talks about biochar, which is it's kind of new, but it's been around since for over 1,000 years. There's evidence that the Incans used it in the Amazon to increase the fertility of soil. It also increases the water holding capacity and soil uptake capacity, or water uptake capacity of soils, which is very much needed in the arid West, where you're talking about row crops, grazing, or specialty crops. I can tell you the committee Republicans are ready to rise to the occasion. I'm hopeful that we can work across the aisle with our Democrat friends who really care about this issue, and that we can pass meaningful policy that will address the problem, and that will finally start to put our forest back on the road to being healthy and resilient. That take into consideration the changes in climate, the warming and drying conditions. That doesn't mean we should just throw up our hands and quit. There's a way we can manage to get the right basal area per acre, where we can maximize carbon storage on the forest, where we can get larger trees. And as we move forward, I'll be talking more about some of the exciting projects that have happened around the country.
That's our show for today. If you have something you'd like us to cover, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.